Welcome to Book Waves on Cover to Cover. I'm Richard Walensky. My guest is Don Winslow, whose latest novel is The Kings of Cool, prequel to Savages. Earlier novels include Savages, The Death and Life of Bobby Z. There are 15 novels in all at this point?
Yeah, I think that's right, 14 or 15. I'm not being coy, I've just kind of lost count.
Kings of Cool, as I say, is a prequel to Savages, which was a big bestseller and got a rave review in, the New York Times.
Yeah, man.
And was recently released as a film directed by Oliver Stone, which we'll talk about a little bit because reading a book and then seeing a movie within 4 or 5 days of finishing the book is a very interesting experience because you can really get into the changes that went on. But let's first talk about your career and how you came to write Savages. You were born in Halloween, 1953.
Right.
Grew up in Rhode Island in a mafia ghetto. Your dad was a former Marine.
My dad was, career Navy and Marine. And, you know, Rhode Island in those days, well, in these days too, you know, has a large mafia presence. And so used to see those guys around.
Did any of that rub off on you in terms of wanting to read or write thrillers, or did that come from a different, completely different place?
I think it came from a different place. You know, I was probably in my late 20s. I started reading guys like, you know, of course, Raymond Chandler and the McDonalds and James Ellroy, Elmore Leonard, and the material really appealed to me. And I thought, you know, maybe I could do that.
Was that before or after you became a PI, private investigator?
During.
You went to New York. You were put in charge of some movie theaters. How did you become a private investigator?
Through the movie theaters, because movie theaters really are kind of glittering walls of theft. You know, there's levels of theft that go on all over the place, and including, you know, the manipulation of tickets to steal box office receipts. So later on, a buddy of mine who had was managing a string of legitimate movie theaters in Times Square, believe it or not, there were such things back then even, brought me in to determine who was stealing. And then I stayed with that detective agency and went on and did other things.
How many years were you with the detective agency?
With that agency, you know, only a couple of years, and then I moved on and did other things, and then I came back and I was with an outfit called Forensic Anthropology Incorporated, which is about as murky as it sounds, and started doing a lot of cases out in California.
Did you begin to notice the difference between what you were reading and the reality, or were they closer than you thought they'd be?
You know, surprisingly, they were closer than I thought they would be. You know, not so much in terms of the facts, but in terms of the zeitgeist, if you will, the you know, the ambiance, the way people felt about who they were and what they did.
And you'd always been reading, but what was it that turned you on to writing? I know you were going back to grad school at the time, working as a PI,
yeah.
And that's when you wrote your first novel, A Cool Breeze on the Underground, right?
Right. Boy, you've done your homework, man. I'm not sure I remembered that. Yeah, I'd always wanted to be a writer. You know, I mentioned that my dad was a sailor, and so I used to sit under the table in the dining room when he'd have his buddies over. He'd pretend to think I'd gone to bed if I stayed quiet. So I literally sat at the feet of some of the great storytellers of all times, you know, and listened to these stories of these guys who traveled all over the world. And books were sacred in our house. My mom was a librarian. My dad was a terrific reader. And so we were always encouraged and allowed to read. And so I thought, you know, if my life worked out the way I wanted it to work out, that would be the very best thing in the world to be.
So you began writing and you created a series character, Neil Carey, who's a PI. Kind of you?
A little bit. You know, it's funny. I was at a book signing years ago, and someone in the audience asked, "Are you Neil Carey?" And I shook my head, and out of the corner of my eye, I see my wife vigorously nodding hers. So I had to change my opinion. Yeah, you know, listen, Neil Carey is about a graduate student who can never finish his degree because the agency keeps sending him on cases. And that was somewhat my experience as well. So, yeah, a little bit autobiographical.
Okay, so you write that. How hard or easy was it to get it published, that first?
You know, it took me, I think, 3 years to write, 5 pages a day. And I think the first 14 publishers turned it down. And then the 15th signed it up. That was St. Martin's. And I've been under contract ever since.
You started with St. Martin's, which means you started with absolutely no publicity.
Or money.
But they did a lot of good mysteries.
Yeah, they really did. Listen, let's not knock them. You know, I mean, they've started a lot of people, and a lot of people have had great careers, you know, staying with St. Martin's. I was, I think, 5 or 6 books into my career before I could quit my day job.
And you wrote these five novels. And one of the interesting things about writing a series is eventually you have to find ways to keep yourself interested,
yeah,
or you can't go on. And you decided to hell with it at a certain point.
At a certain point in time, you know, after five of those books, I thought, I knew I was bored and I suspected I was getting boring. And I wanted to do something different. As I said, I was still working as a PI, and I was commuting on a train between San Juan Capistrano, California, and downtown L.A., where this law office was. I found pretty quickly it was more amusing to write a book on a train than read a book on a train. And so I started writing the book you've got sitting over there, The Death and Life of Bobby Z.
Were you afraid at all that without writing a series, your career could tank? Because it did with a number of series writers when they tried to write standalones.
I kind of thought my career was over. I was surprised when anyone published Bobby Z.
Really?
Yeah, I really was. You know, actually, it sold to the movies first. It sold to Warner Brothers on a Friday, and then to Knopf the following Tuesday. All of a sudden, I could quit my day job and be a full-time writer.
And also the setting shifted to California.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I had started going out there actually to do cases, and I just fell in love with it. You know, it was a different world, different way for me to see the world. I started writing very differently. I switched basically from the third person to omniscient past tense to writing in the present tense, and usually from a very tight character point of view. Which I found exciting and refreshing. All of a sudden, I was just really interested in what I was doing and hope the reader was too. And so, yeah, that whole change was a huge change for me.
That also means that in a way you were kind of feeling your way through different voices and trying different voices. I mean, James Ellroy, of course, is a master at having changed styles.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, listen, Ellroy was a great example to me. And I love Ellroy's work, and I loved Ellroy's work before I was a writer, you know, and I still read it.
Don Winslow, Bobby Z does have a relationship to Kings of Cool.
Yeah.
But between that, there were a number of different novels set in California, and there were a couple of novels featuring a character named Boone Daniels,
right,
a PI surfer. Did you start surfing at the time, too?
You know, I grew up on the coast in Rhode Island and surfed there as a kid.
Really?
Yeah, they have waves in Rhode Island.
Surfing waves? I don't remember them on the South Shore of New York. Big and crash.
You got to get up off the sound, you know, and okay, come up to the open ocean. They weren't huge, usually, but enough. And yeah, then I started doing some surfing in SoCal. And got interested in the culture. You know, I found the culture amusing and fun and very specific. And I like writing about sort of microcultures, if you will.
And there were a number of novels in there. Frankie Machine, which,
yeah,
was more of a mafia novel.
Right.
And then there was one, California...
California Fire and Life, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
California Fire and Life, which was about kind of arson cases that you covered.
Yeah, it's my only really kind of... It's as close as I've come to a classic procedural. You know, was inspired by a few cases that I had when I was working, and yeah.
Well, Don Winslow, let's now talk about these two books, because I think these two books kind of work together. And
I hope so.
It seemed to me I had to kind of read Savages before Kings of Cool, rather than the other way around, even though Kings of Cool is the prequel.
Right.
What struck me about Savages, in particular, was the voice, which is an omniscient, snide, cynical, political voice.
Yeah.
Did the voice come before the characters? How did that emerge?
They came at the same time. You know, I sat down and typed out the now infamous first chapter of that book, you know, two words. And I guess that spoke of a certain voice and a certain kind of snarky attitude. You know, I was angry about, I think, a lot of things at the time. And then all of a sudden, I found myself writing the next chapter through the point of view of a 20-something-year-old Orange County woman talking about her boyfriend.
The book itself, even though you do kind of go from character to character, that omniscient narrator always remains snide and puts everything in a political and social context.
Yeah, you know, it was a real departure for me in substance and style. You know, I guess I had some things that I wanted to say. At the time, I was feeling really constrained by what I thought was the increasing definitions that ruled my genre, the crime genre. And I think every once in a while, frankly, you have to throw some elbows, you know, to create a little space for yourself. And with that book, I thought, you know what? I'm just going to write the book the way I hear it in my head. and to hell with the rules and all of that and just go for it.
You knew immediately you were going back to the terrain of Bobby Z in a way.
Yeah, I was going back to the marijuana world in Southern California. You know, with Kings of Cool, I go way back with it to
right.
talk about the origins of that, you know, back in the 60s when, to me, I'm kind of a history geek, you know. I'm not kind of, I'm a history geek. You had a moment where the hippie culture came south in search of cheaper rents, believe it or not, in Laguna Beach, and met the surfer culture.
Savages, which takes place, like I said, in 2009.
Right.
Kings of Cool takes place over time and also in 2005, but it's all Laguna Beach.
Yeah.
With, I mean, the borders out in Mexico
trips,
and other places
right.
as well, but it's primarily there. What kind of research did you do for Savages itself to get down the story of grow houses, the relationship of the Mexican mobs? And I recall seeing a couple of real people in there, which means you were incorporating reality into this fictional framework.
Yeah, absolutely. About, I think it's maybe 6 years ago now, I did a book called The Power of the Dog, which is a lengthy novel about the origins of the Mexican cartels, and it follows the so-called war on drugs for about 35 years through the eyes of five characters. That was my base research. That was a six-year project of writing and researching. So I felt I had a fairly decent grasp of that world, of the Mexican cartels and what they were up to. In the intervening, 6 years, things got so much worse. I thought I'd written the worst of the worst in Power of the Dog. I sadly was wrong.
Do those characters connect up with this book or no?
Not as particular characters. I don't think I have any of the same characters, but certainly the cartel that I talk about is based on the Baja cartel, which is the central, unit in Power of the Dog, comes back in Savages 6 years later.
Well, in Savages, you also connected up with the PRI and what's happening in Mexican politics as well.
Right. Again, things have gotten immeasurably worse. 50,000 deaths, drug-related deaths, since I wrote Power of the Dog, between Power of the Dog and Savages,
The three main characters, Chon, Ben, and O, how did they emerge?
I lived there. I lived for years in Laguna Beach and Dana Point. I still hang out there a lot. And so I had friends, I had buddies, guys I hung out with, guys I surfed with, guys I did martial arts with. So I would just hang out, at Main Beach Laguna, these various places. You'd hear snatches of conversations. You'd see these people. People would tell you stories. I didn't base them, again, on any particular people. Although it's very common now for strangers to approach me in restaurants and things in that area and say, I'm O, or, I'm Ben. And, I'm flattered by it, actually, but it's not so. So it was really a matter of kind of becoming furniture, in that area and absorbing it.
Then after you wrote Savages, it came out, I guess at that point, having ended the book, there's no way to
right.
go on. That was pretty much it for you, right?
Yeah. Well, so I thought.
So you wrote Satori, which is a prequel to a Trevanian novel, Shibumi.
Right.
And another book after that, Gentleman's Hour, right?
There was a 15-month period that's kind of a blur to me now, and I'm not sure what order came where, but I wrote Satori, Gentleman's Hour, and Savages in that 15-month period, mostly simultaneously.
So you're skipping from one to the other.
I do that. I have sort of a morning book and an afternoon book.
Okay, so you finish Savages. It gets bought by the movies. At what point, had you worked on the screenplay before you began Kings of Cool? What prompted you, just by getting back to the screenplay, you finally said to yourself, I'm not done with these characters?
Yeah, pretty much. My buddy and co-author of the screenplay, Shane Salerno, a terrific screenwriter, he talked to me about it. He said, have you thought about a prequel? I said, not really. And then I got thinking about it, because the fact is that I knew the stories that make up Kings of Cool while I was writing Savages. I just picked it up very late in their arc. But I knew their backstories already. Absolutely. I knew who these people were from birth. I knew who their parents were. I just didn't choose to tell those stories in Savages. I wanted this very fast, very quick story that took place over the course of weeks, if you really look at it. Kings of Cool, takes place over the course of decades. There's a main story that's fairly brief, but the backstories, start in the 60s. And so I thought, I think I do want to go back and tell an origin story about, you know, who these guys were. Before they were savages, they were the kings of cool. You know?
And at that point, the movie was still, it hadn't hit the point where it was going to exist, or was it existing at that point?
You know, the film wasn't existing. We had, you know, done the screenplay, and it was moving toward production. And I started to write Kings.
After you finished writing the first draft of Savages?
I think that's right. I think that's right. Yeah, it's kind of a blur to me, to be perfectly frank with you. I mean, it all happened so fast. You know, it's funny. We made the film deal for Savages. It started shooting exactly to the day a year after that, and premiered exactly to the day a year after that.
How did it feel to get back to that voice?
Yeah, it felt fun, you know. I had a good time writing both these books. Because, again, it was sort of stretching your muscles, you know, and doing some kind of odd things, you know. If I thought, for instance, that a reader in either of these books would experience a scene better as a movie, I wrote that chapter as a screenplay. If I thought that they would hear it better as poetry, I wrote it in blank verse. It's kind of fun, you know.
So you just kind of let your unconscious take over at that point.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I mean, there were some very conscious choices that I sat back and I really thought about, of course, particularly in rewriting, as one does. But for the most part, you know, I just kind of let it rip.
Did you create some kind of timeline at one point to try to figure out where things fit in?
Yeah, yeah. Kings of Cool was much more of a structural challenge. You know, because Savage is a pretty straightforward story. You know, it starts and you kick that ball down the hill and it goes. Kings, I needed to find the right moments in the main story to go back 40 years, 30 years, 20 years, 10 years. You know, when was the right moment to hit that? And that was a structural issue, and I went back and forth on it a lot.
In that backstory, there is one character, Doc Halliday, who I don't believe appears at all in Savages, if I remember correctly.
You're right, yeah. There was an organization in Southern California in the 60s and going into the 70s called the Brotherhood, which I fictionalize as the Association. Doc is a figure, you know, from the early days of the Southern California marijuana trade. And so I needed that founder, if you will, that father figure, you know, that goes throughout the book. To me, Kings of Cool is about families.
I was wondering if you were particularly concerned about whether we as readers would pick up who the parents were, or whether we should care about that, or whether you were withholding information or just didn't give a damn.
I would never say I don't give a damn, but I think that reading is such a personal experience, and I think if I try to figure out too much, oh, God, when are they going to catch on to this? When are they going to catch on to this? You know, this guy might, that woman might not, that woman might, this, you know, that you make yourself a little crazy. So I wanted some suspense about that, but I wanted to leave enough so that people would go, aha, surprising yet inevitable, which is what, of course, you're always shooting for.
It's the difference between television writing, which often goes for surprise without inevitability, and writing for a book.
I think you have to be fair with the reader at the end of the day. You know, I hate that moment in books or television or film or whatever, jokes, where, you know, the guy's trapped on the top of the Empire State Building and then suddenly discovers he can fly. I think you have to at some point indicate that his mother might have been a bird, you know, earlier in the story.
Don Winslow, were there any characters in Savages, I'm thinking specifically, of course, of Dennis the DEA character, mm-hmm. who kind of took a bigger role and then they had to take a bigger role in the earlier book, in the other book?
Yes to the first answer, no to the second. I think when we started doing the screenplay, we got more involved with Dennis than we had in the book, because he was, a terrific character who could say great things and give essential information in an entertaining kind of way. And you also had a John Travolta, you know, that you're not going to ignore.
In reading Savages, I had no idea of who Dennis was. Mm-hmm. After seeing the movie, while I was reading Kings of Cool, the rest of Kings of Cool, while the main characters, I didn't necessarily, they were still in my head. They weren't the three actors on screen.
Right.
Travolta became Dennis in my head.
That's interesting, yeah. You know, again, I wanted to tell the beginnings of things in Kings of Cool. I wanted to go back and see how did these people arrive at the moment that we meet them in Savages. And so to do that with Dennis, the DEA agent, was a kind of a much longer story. But to me, that was a lot of the story of the book, is how we went from the sort of naive idealism we had in the 60s, or there was in the 60s, you know, to the cynicism that we have now. A lot of that is Dennis's trip. He starts out as the idealist drug warrior, ends up as a corrupt cop.
Well, that's also the story of Ben's parents, Stan and Diane, who go from being idealistic hippies to, I mean, they stay on the left, but
right.
They pretty much sold their soul.
Yeah, I think so. I've described it as the journey from commune to condo, to a world where everything became about real estate, really.
How do you think that relates to America at large today?
I think it's the same journey. I don't want to be presumptuous. You know, at the end of the day, I'm a crime fiction writer. I'm a genre guy. But I wanted to tell in The Kings of Cool a story about America over those years. It's funny. I think you can almost track the mood or the zeitgeist of the nation through which illicit drug is in vogue at that time. You go back to the 60s and you have it's marijuana and it's LSD. It's psychedelic. It's let's all get together. It's peace and love. Then cocaine comes in. And that's an aggressive drug, and it's an acquisitive drug, and it becomes about power and about things and about money, and I think that's the journey the country was taking then. Then you get into meth, the worker's drug, you know, this hyper-driven, over-driven kind of society. And now the biggest drug problem are the opium-based, you know, legal prescription derivatives, and I sometimes wonder, does the country just want to be asleep?
I've talked to a lot of thriller and crime writers, and, I mean, they're writing for entertainment, but there's something else going on under the surface.
Yeah, you know, I think if you look at noir, noir's always been concerned about social issues and about class, and it's always focused more on the powerless than the powerful, but the conflict between them. So I think you're quite right. I mean, I think that we've always had that kind of social awareness, and as much as we try to maybe hide it under our tough guy disguise, you know, it's always there. I think if you look at Philip Marlowe, you know, Chandler's great character, and I think he defined that hero. You know, down these mean streets must come a man who is not himself mean. So I think sometimes as crime writers, we kind of sneak it in. You know, we go, I'm going to write about murder, I'm going to write about drugs, but I might, you know, slip in a little bit of conscience and a little bit of soul underneath that.
Don Winslow, well, how did it feel going back to Oh, Chan and Ben in Kings of Cool?
Very familiar. You know, I think writers fall in love with their characters at a certain point in time where it doesn't work. And so to go back in time to pick, you know, I pick O up in preschool, you know, for God's sake, and Chan as well. It was satisfying to me to tell those early stories, largely because, I mean, a lot of readers, you know, seemed interested in it. Simple little questions. How did Chan become Chan instead of John? You know, it was fun to answer simple little things, but it was also fun to answer some of the larger kind of questions. So I enjoyed spending time with them.
I kept thinking as I was reading Kim O's mother's journey,
yeah,
is she's going to wind up a fundamentalist Christian? And I'm going, oh, God, no.
I think, I could be wrong, I think there's a reference to that in Savage as being one of her phases. But, you know, listen, I think, you know, it's fun sometimes to, you know, to do a little satire about the society we live in, and particularly SoCal's, you know, constant going from one phase to the next and, you know, one thing to the next. It's kind of fun to poke a little humor at that.
Did you have to do any research on Iraqi ambushes for Savages?
Sure. I watched a lot of footage as much as I could and of course, talked to people as well.
In Kings of Cool, what was the hardest thing to write?
The hardest thing to write were the chapters that took place in the 1960s because I think it's a very hard era to write about without becoming burlesque. Do you know what I mean? It's so easy to fall into sort of cheap satire of that era. I've been thinking a lot about that lately, actually, because, you know, it's easy to poke fun at the counterculture of those days and fun to do it. But I think sometimes we tend to forget how much was really accomplished in those days. How different the country is now, you know, about things that we take for granted that came out of those days. So as easy as it is to poke fun at the clothing and some of the language and the style and that kind of thing, there were some real, I think, lasting achievements.
And a lot of the Tea Party anger and Republican angle still seems to come from, they're still pissed off about what happened in the 60s.
They're still mad, man. You know, it's yeah, I can't, listen, I'm Irish. I can't hold a grudge that long, you know, but they're still upset. I don't know. I think there's a sense among some of the population, you know, well, let's be blunt about it, white males, that we think we've lost something, or we think that something's been taken away from us somehow, and I just say thank God, you know.
Don Winslow, let's talk a little bit about Oliver Stone. How did it come that you wrote the screenplay?
Shane Salerno put it together. You know, it's funny, Shane was present from creation. I wrote the first 14 pages of the novel and emailed it to him and said, either I'm crazy or this is really good. Not necessarily mutually exclusive options, I get. And in a half an hour, he emailed back and said, drop everything else you're doing and write this book while you're still in this headspace, which is what I did. So I think Shane from the beginning thought that maybe, this is immodest, but maybe the voice was so specific in the book that they needed my presence on the screenplay, and that's how that came about.
Where did Oliver Stone come in?
Right around that time. Again, Shane thought that this was, you know, perfect material for Stone. And he contacted him, put it together, and we had dinner, and we were off.
Well, you'd had a bad experience with Bobby Z, so you didn't want to repeat that, right?
True enough. I think most novelists take one of two broad streams in their relationship to film. You know, one is to take the money and run, and the other is to be really involved. I used to be the first, you know, throw the money over the fence to me, and I'll take it and run back before you change your mind. Then I saw Bobby Z. Nobody sets out to make a bad film, you know, and those were nice people and all of that, but I was surprised at how much it hurt. I thought I would have been more detached, so I went the other direction with it. You know, I decided to get more involved.
Well, you'd had some work in Hollywood as well.
Yeah.
According to IMDb, you worked on a TV show called UC Undercover.
UC Undercover. That's when Shane and I met. And we did that series, which lasted for half a season.
You were part of the writing team.
I was, yeah. Shane was a showrunner.
By the time Bobby Z came along, since you already had experience dealing with teleplays at least, there was also something called Full Ride, right?
Yeah, Full Ride was a little independent film some buddies of mine in Nebraska made.
So you'd had experience. Why did you take the hands-off attitude given the fact that you'd already had experience?
I think I believed some mythology. People would come to me, you know, I would make objections, you know, to certain aspects, and they would say, it's very funny, film people very often speak to novelists slowly. They slow down like you know, like you're a kind of dim student, and they say things, you know, like, you know, Don, this is a different medium. And I knew that, actually. But they said something to me was quite logical, which is, you're basically a novelist, we're film people, we know better. And that makes a certain kind of sense. But I think that the elements of storytelling are universal across media. And I think they have to be there. And the other aspect was, look, I think if you don't get into the game, I think at a certain point in time, you lose the right to complain.
Okay, so you had your screenplay. You go to Stone, and he works on it, and he creates his own movie. It seemed to me that where Stone failed, and I thought he'd be perfect for it, was in not really being able to translate the voice of the book to the visuals. That's my thought.
Yeah, listen, people have different thoughts about it. I frankly think he did a pretty decent job of it.
On the other hand, I thought that Travolta and Benicio del Toro were amazing.
I did too.
Two things I noticed, because again, I could see some of the way you made it work. There's an amazing scene in a mall where we got to see, introduce a character called Magda, who will play a role at the end, while we have O in the same mall. And I thought that was a brilliant way to bring the omniscient narrator together with how it worked. And I thought that was amazing.
Thank you, yeah. I don't think that's in the book. And
no, it's not.
And so I was pretty impressed with it.
Was that something you did then?
It is so hard at this phase, I got to tell you, to say who thought of what. You know, it's funny, Shane and I were looking at the trailer one day. And a line came on, and I looked at him. I said, Shane, that's a really great line. And he started to laugh. He said, well, it's in the book. You wrote it. And I'd forgotten completely that I'd written it.
Don Winslow, what three books are you working on now?
I don't want to go into it in any, you know, any real detail, but they're, you know, three crime books in kind of different styles, each one different from the other.
A friend of mine asked if Boone Daniels is going to resurface.
Someday. Not immediately, but I'm sure I'll bring Boone back. The thing of it is right now, you know, life's good, and I feel maybe more energetic than I have in years. I haven't written my best book yet, you know, and so I have a lot of books I want to write, and looking forward to doing it.
Well, you know, Dennis Lehane at a certain point said, I love writing genre fiction, but I'm going to try a big, huge historical novel, mm-hmm. and he did. Is that in your mind, too?
Not right now. Listen, I loved Lehane's book. You know, liked it a lot, as a matter of fact. But no. I think, you know, I have a couple of big books in mind, but they're in the crime genre. I like my neighborhood. I might go visit somewhere else, but that's where I live.
Do you ever plan to get back into TV?
Maybe. You know, I find TV to be a really interesting medium, simply because of the time that you have to develop characters and storylines and themes. You know, it's relatively leisurely as opposed to film.
Well, then let me ask you, in terms of writing for television and then writing a whole bunch of novels afterward, how did the writing for television influence your writing of your novels? Did it?
I don't think it did. Listen, structurally, you know, television is more similar to the novel than film is. You know, each episode's a chapter. And then you're sort of projecting it out over the course of seasons in the same way that you are with a novel. So the arc is much more similar, you know, than a film is. I think easier for a novelist to do, actually.
Do you ever plan to come back to Ben and Sean, or are we finally finished with them?
Finally finished? You know, I don't have any immediate plans to do that. I've been with those three guys now for 3 years. And we probably need a little break from each other, a little bit of literary cabin fever maybe, but
I was with them for 600 straight pages.
I'm sorry, man. How'd that work out?
Well, you know, that was, I think the problem with my complaint about the film is that two-thirds of the way through a 600-page novel, you know, counting them as one book, I suddenly see them on screen.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in my head. You know, and that was an issue.
Well, listen, but isn't that true of virtually every adaptation of a book? You know, I mean, you know, you have an image of your head, in your head of a character, and then you see it on the screen. To me, it's almost always different.
What blew my mind about Travolta was that he was never in my head for Savages. And so after that, there he was in his sequences in Kings of Cool,
right.
And there was Travolta.
Well, listen, I just think that that's coincidental, you know. I mean, I think, listen, Travolta's a very, very striking actor, you know, with a long career of doing striking films. He's not on that screen by accident. And so, you know, he's a guy that tends to stick in your mind.
Don Winslow, what's your next book that's coming out? Do you have something?
You know, I'm working, again, on three books right now. The Kings of Cool just came out. So you'll hear from me in about a year, I think. I'll have another book out.
Any more films?
Yeah. Yeah, I just Shane and I just finished doing a screenplay of Satori, the book you alluded to earlier, with another very striking actor, Leonardo DiCaprio. So, life's good.
You have a director for that yet?
Not yet. Oh. Just finishing up the screenplay now.
You've been listening to an interview with Don Winslow, whose latest novel is Kings of Cool, a prequel to Savages, which is also a film by Oliver Stone. I'm Richard Walensky on Cover to Cover.